हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Nard Muni, page 136. Nard Muni continued, Lord Nrsingadev's mouth and mane were sprinkled with drops of blood, and his fierce eyes, full of anger, were impossible to look at. Licking the edge of his mouth with his tongue, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nrsingadev, decorated with a garland of intestines taken from Hiranyakashipu's abdomen, resembled a lion that has just killed an elephant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had many, many arms, first uprooted Hiranyakashipu's heart and then threw him aside and turned towards the demon soldiers. These soldiers had come in thousands to fight with him with raised weapons and were very faithful followers of Hiranyakashipu. But Lord Nrsingadev killed all of them merely with the ends of his nails. 30-31. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Hiranyakashipu's lotus heart was uprooted by the buds of the Lord's nails. The Lord thought, I was living happily in his heart, but how did this unfortunate person make anger and hatred live there as well? He pulled out his heart as if to inspect it. He used the buds of his nails in order not to damage the lotus of his heart. The Lord had groups of arms. Srila Prabhupada adds, since the creation of the material world, there have been two kinds of men, the devatas and the asuras. The devas are always faithful to the personality of Godhead, whereas the asuras are always atheists who defy the supremacy of the Lord. At the present moment, throughout the entire world, the atheists are extremely numerous. They are trying to prove that there is no God and that everything takes place due to combinations and permutations of material elements. Thus, the material world has become more and more godless, and consequently, everything is in a disturbed condition. If this continues, the Supreme Personality of Godhead will certainly take action, as he did in the case of Hiranyakashipu. Within a second, Hiranyakashipu and his followers were destroyed. And similarly, if this godless civilization continues, it will be destroyed in a second, simply by the movements of one finger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demons should therefore be careful and curtail their godless civilization. They should take advantage of the Krishna conscious movement and become faithful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, they are doomed. As Hiranyakashipu was killed in a second, the godless civilization can be destroyed at any moment. Right? So Krishna is always in control. It's just that depending upon their desire, depending on their needs, then things run for a while. But when it gets too out of hand, then it has to be brought back to its correct position. Right. That makes sense. That's the principle of Dhirodhata of Krishna. So the Sankarshan feature, then he will remove the atheistic element, establish the religious element properly. Right? Religious means actually understanding the science of what's going on, not a made up science. Right? That makes sense.
Right.
Yes.
Can we say that actually anytime the Lord should appear, it's already said in the scriptures, so it's kind of
yes,
known.
But it just means he can take care. He doesn't have to appear to take care. Mm-hmm. Like Hiranyakashipu, Maya can kill him. Mm-hmm. But because of his devotee, then he comes for the pastime of interacting with the devotee. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, he can take care of everything just through the energy itself. The laws of nature take care. You know, just in the moment, something can happen. You know, natural disasters, or often the modes get, you know, different people to fight, or, you know, these things just happen, like the example is given of the bamboo in the forest, right? It's just with the friction of the wind, then it starts a fire. Right? Yeah. Narad Muni continued, "The hair on Nrisingadeva's head shook in the clouds and scattered them here and there. His glaring eyes stole the effulgent of the luminaries in the sky, and his breath agitated the seas and oceans. Because of his roaring, all the elephants in the world began to cry in fear. Airplanes were thrown into outer space, and the upper planetary system, by the hair on Nrisingadeva's head, were thrown into outer space and the upper planetary system, by the hair on Nrisingadeva's head. Because of the pressure of the Lord's lotus feet, the earth appeared to slip from its position, and all the hills and mountains sprang up due to his intolerable force. Because of the Lord's bodily effulgence, both the sky and all directions diminished in their natural illumination." 32 and 33. Srila Prabhupada comments, "That there were airplanes flying in the sky long, long ago can be understood from this verse. Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken 5,000 years ago, and the statements of this verse prove that the symptoms of very advanced civilization then existed, even in the upper planetary systems as well as in the lower planetary systems. Modern scientists and philosophers foolishly explained that there was no civilization prior to 3,000 years ago, but the statement of this verse nullifies such whimsical judgments. The Vedic civilization existed millions and millions of years ago. It existed since the creation of this universe. And it included arrangements all over the universe with all the modern amenities and even more." And so always there's been civilization. It's just a matter of when it manifests, how it manifests, and that. But it's always been there. So this idea of simply that the Western culture has become, you know, more civilized, that now only there's civilization. Because even in this recent history, if you look, there's so many things in these so-called ancient civilizations that are far more advanced and developed than what they can do today, you know, in certain areas. So if you just continue that back, you go back, it's mentioned here in the Vedic civilization, it's very advanced. So the point is the Lord makes it this way. And so then it's like that. People don't want to understand it. And it's like, how advanced is the Vedic civilization? And so then when, you know, a group of people come over here on their ships with cannons, then in their minds there can only be savages here, even though everything they did was more sophisticated, more developed than those persons or anybody, you know, from their country. There's just no comparison. But the point is due to envy, one will always see something else, even if it's better, as not good. Right? It means you have to actually be quite intelligent to be able to appreciate the character of someone you would consider an enemy. To be able to see their prowess, see their power, see their ability. That's actually a high-grade person. But low-grade, no matter what it is, then they just kill everybody. Right? You know, like the Incas. They had to be savages, right? You know, that's the only way they would have come up with more gold than the Western world has ever seen. You know? Right, of course. Because, you know, it had to be a savage to do that. And, you know, it's only natural that they would take all this, burden off the hands of these childlike individuals, you know, so that the great European civilization that doesn't even take a bath could, you know, use it properly, you know, for the purposes that gold was meant for. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that you go into a place and it's just seen as that there's something wrong with it. So you see that everywhere. Like that. They may not be so sophisticated or developed, but it still doesn't mean that one deals with everybody in a bad way. So here is pointing out that the authority of the Shastras has pointed out that there's already advanced civilizations before. That's the principle. So that's understood, that's accepted. Okay. Yeah. Narad Muni continued, manifesting a full effulgence and a fearsome countenance, Lord Nrisingadev being very angry and finding no contestant to face his power and opulence, then sat down in the assembly hall on the excellent throne of the king. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. Right? So there's no, what do you call it? Yeah, it's just no one to fight with. Okay, then what to do? Then he sits down. 34. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains, a king is defined as one whose power is accepted by the person whom he conquers. Thus he sat on the king's throne, as if showing who should be king. Or, though his servant gatekeeper had been cursed, the Lord did not see him except as his servant. Thus the Lord, who did not accept the offering of a seat purified by mantras or other gifts offered by the sages, accepted a throne already used and not offered to him, because it belonged to his devotee, even though the devotee had been cursed and took on the nature of a demon. By this the Lord showed to all persons the great fortune of his devotee. The Lord showed full light. He had no opponents. No devotee served the Lord with fan or other items out of fear. Right? So either it's, you know, he's established the proper attitude, so therefore he's sitting upon the throne, so that he's the Lord. Or you're looking at it that because that was the seat used by his devotee, therefore he's sitting on it. Not something, because the sages in that can't even come forward to offer him anything. Right? So he's just sitting there out of the position because it belonged to his devotee. Does that make sense? You know, because his devotees are there, then they get cursed by the Brahmins, and then they come as Hiranyakashipu. Right? So, but that doesn't mean that it's not his devotee. Verses 35 to 36, the demigods rejoice and offer their prayers. The entire universe was thus relieved of the rule of Hiranyakashipu, and everyone was jubilant in transcendental bliss. Then all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, began offering the prayers unto the Lord, whose spiritual effulgence was brilliant as he sat on the throne. Narad Muni continued, Hiranyakashipu had been exactly like a fever of meningitis in the head of the three worlds. Thus, when the wives of the demigods in the heavenly planet saw that the great demon had been killed by the personal hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their faces blossomed in great joy. The wives of the demigods again and again showered flowers from heaven upon Lord Nrisingadev like rain. At that time, the airplanes of the demigods, who desired to see the activities of the Supreme Lord Narayana, crowded the sky. The demigods began beating drums and kettle drums, and upon hearing them, the angelic women began to dance, while the chiefs of the Gandharvas sang sweetly. My dear King Yudhishthira, the demigods then approached the Lord. They were headed by Lord Brahma, King Indra, and Lord Shiva, and included great saintly persons in the residence of Pitriloka, Siddhaloka, Vidyadharaloka, and the planet of the snakes. Right, so, in telling him, then bringing it back here to this point, is that for the king, then yes, this is natural. That he, you know, Krishna is his friend, right? And so, therefore, that all the different heads of the universe are all serving him, then, you know, it's a very natural thing. So nice to hear. It's not like he's amazed by all this. You know, he's not going to ask a question about, oh, they're all there, you know, and all this kind of thing. That's standard. Right? So for him, then he can appreciate this. This is not the amazing thing. The glories of the Lord, that's what's special. The manas approached, and so did the chiefs of various other planets. The angelic dancers approached, as did the Gandharvas, the Charnas, the Yakshas, the inhabitants of Kinara Loka, the Vaitalas, the inhabitants of Kimpurusha Loka, and the personal servants of Vishnu, like Sunanda and Kamuda. Like, they're also doorkeepers. I think Sunanda and Kamuda are the ones for the east gate. Like that.
Sunanda.
Nanda and Sunanda?
Maybe these are the...
There are two other ones. That I know of, there are other ones, because there's 49 pairs of them, so, like that. So Jayan Vijay is famous because of this pastime. But and so, therefore, you always see them on the gate to the deity's place.
Right.
But on the city gates, then there's all the others. And so there's sometimes it's mentioned, you know, all the gatekeepers headed by the two, because you start in the east and then you go around. And so I don't know if it's, you start from the inside and then go around and it gets to the outside, which way it works. But on the deity room itself, then you always have Jayan Vijay. Though typically they're gatekeepers on an outside gate. Right? But because of their service and everything, therefore they're also on the deity room itself. Right? Yeah, the Vaitalas, even the different, you know, more interesting elements are there. All of them came near the Lord, who glowed with intense light. They individually offered their obeisances and prayers, their hands folded at their heads.
Who's the Vaitalas?
Vaitalas. They're one kind of ghost. Like that, they're powerful. Like that, when what's his name? Vikramaditya. Mm-hmm. He had one thing he was trying. I forget what he was trying to do, but he had to carry this Vaitala. He was like hanging in a tree. He had to carry him to a particular place, and then, but while he was walking, the Vaitala would tell him stories. And the story always had a question in it. And if he knew the answer, he had to say the answer. Because if he didn't, his head would crack into 10,000 pieces. Right? But if he said the answer, the Vaitala would go back to the tree. And then he'd have to come the next night and go like that. So, like that, I think there's 1,000 stories. But it was this Vaitala was a judge. You know, in a kingdom. And these 1,000 were the cases he could not answer. And because of being so disturbed by thinking about them, he became a Vaitala. So then in the process, then all of his questions were answered, and therefore it worked out. Right? Thinking it's tough questions, I'll tell you one of the questions. Okay. So, just so you understand the nature of what kind of question. So, at one time, you know, this is back thousands of years ago, but the Vaitala was talking about in the future when the British would come into India and that, and then the armies were there. He mentioned all the names. They're actual kings and stuff. So he mentioned the names, and then he said that this one king was out at battle. And in the battle, I forget how it was, but he was out there with his... They were escaping or something with his... I'm not sure. The wife and the daughter were out in the forest. When the king was killed and these other, you know, Western soldiers were coming, then they went running into the forest. At some distance away, I guess the next kingdom... That king and his son were out, must be hunting or something. And then they saw the tracks of the women. And so then they were thinking, you know, that, you know, by the, you know, the footprints and that, they can tell the quality, the class of the women and all that. And so one of the footprints was big, one was small. And so then they were thinking this must be about the, you know, the war, something like this, and so they're unprotected, so then we should take care of them. So then they worked out as, okay, the big footprints, then the father, the king, will take care of, and the son will take care of the one with the smaller footprints. You know, because natural, he's older, he's bigger, and the son's younger, and so like that. So when they do come across them, and they, you know, and the discussion is there, they find out that the big footprints are from the daughter, and the small footprints are from the mother. Right? So the mother marries the king's son, and the daughter marries the king. Okay? So, when they have children, what's the relationship between them? Okay. 1,000 of those questions. So I think Vikramaditya for this one just went, That's all his answer was to that one. You know?
Yes. Which are a category of ghosts which, you know, they hang upside down literally. Head is down and their legs are up. That is how they always look.
Yes, that's what he said. He was hanging in a tree. Just to make sure that you know exactly what kind of ghost it is. They're the ones that hang upside down in trees, and that's where you would find them, hanging upside down in a tree. So, yeah, so like that. So when you walk by and you see one hanging upside down in the tree, that's a Vaitala, so don't. You know. Yeah. You know. Okay. If they have chicken feet, that's a jinn.
Like that. Yes. Kinaris.
Kinaris means if a human body and horse head, then that's a kinara. Kinara kinpurushas. Yeah, they're similar. You know, it's like. You know, it's like Czechs and Slovakians, you know, similar, but they're different. Dancing. The Kinaras or the Kimpurushas?
Yeah.
Kinaras. They dance more. Kimpurushas, not as much. You know, just like the Czechs drink more beer, Slovaks a little less, like that. No? Okay, yes, that answer all the questions. Okay. Yes, we're doing better than the Vaitala was, right? Okay. Lord Brahma prayed, "My Lord, you are unlimited and you possess unending potencies. No one can estimate or calculate your prowess and wonderful influence. For your actions are never polluted by the material energy. Through the material qualities, you very easily create the universe, maintain it, and again annihilate it. Yet, you remain the same, without deterioration. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. "You made the Kumaras get angry and made your two gatekeepers fall. You made me, Brahma, give blessings to the demons, and you made your devotee appear in the family of demons. Inspiring the demon, you cause harm to the devotee. Then you personally manifest yourself to protect your devotee. No one can understand your plan. Therefore, I offer respects to you. I cannot know your limits. To please you, I offer respects to your energies, but the limits of those powers cannot be understood. You have remarkable prowess. Since you killed the unconquerable demon in a moment, you are Shuddha-sattva, and therefore, even if you are angry, your actions are pure. I offer respects to you who perform creation, maintenance, and destruction." So in other words, the Lord's plan cannot be understood. But what we will see is that it will always be in favor of the devotees. Right? But it creates interaction, but it always... Lord Shiva said, "The end of the millennium is the time for your anger. Now that this insignificant demon Hiranyakashipu has been killed, O my Lord, who are naturally affectionate to your devotee, kindly protect his son, Prahlad Maharaj, who is standing nearby as your fully surrendered devotee." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Lord Shiva says, "Everyone is afraid of final destruction on seeing your ferocious form, but I am not. The time of dissolution is the time for your anger. I, your expansion, perform this action." The Lord responds, "I have shown anger out of affection for my devotee." Lord Shiva concludes, "The demon is insignificant for you, and his son, loyal to you, is here." Right, so, others are afraid, you know, from that, but the anger and all that doesn't bother Shiva because, you know, he's a devotee, you know, great devotee, so there's not a problem there, but he's the one that does the Tandava dance at the end of the universe and anger and destroys everything. So that's not, for him, is not the problem. Of course, the Lord does it, it's way better. But, you know, he does good enough. The universe does get destroyed. Right? So he puts the emphasis on the devotional aspect. Lord Brahma then also mentions about the devotional, but he does it a little bit more formally. Like that. King Indra said, "O Supreme Lord, you are our deliverer and protector. Our shares of sacrifices, which are actually yours, have been recovered from the demon by you. Because the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu was most fearsome, our hearts which are your permanent abode, were overtaken by him. Now by your presence, the gloom and darkness in our hearts has been dissipated. O Lord, for those who always engage in your service, which is more exalted than liberation, all material opulence is insignificant. They do not even care for liberation, not to speak of the benefits of kama, artha, and dharma. Srila Prabhupada comments. The demigods fully absorb themselves in meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead to become perfect yogis. But because of the presence of demons, their hearts are filled with the activities of the demons. Thus their hearts, which are meant to be the abode of the Supreme Lord, are practically occupied by the demons. All the demigods felt relieved when Hiranyakashipu was dead, for they could easily think of the Lord. They could then receive the results of sacrifices, become happy, even though in the material world. Right? So demigods means they're serving the Lord. That's their position. But when the demons are making trouble, they have to think of they naturally will think of the demons, how to correct the situation, this and that. So in this way, the demons take over their heart. Right? So now that the demon's dead, now they can naturally think of the Lord again. Right? So that's their position. And then they get all the, they become happy by the benefits that naturally come from the performance of, you know, the service and everything like that. Right? The positions they hold. So we see with this is that when we become absorbed in the secondary features, then we actually aren't absorbed in the Lord as much as would naturally be. Right? Prahlad Maharaj is also the Lord's in his heart, thinking of the Lord. He gets all the trouble by the same demon that they are. In fact, he even gets more trouble than they, but the Lord still remains in his heart. Right? That's the specialness of Prahlad Maharaj, of pure devotion. So we can understand the demigods as mixed devotion. Though it's devotional service, but they get distracted by the secondary elements very easily. Right? While for the pure devotees, then they don't get distracted. So things are favorable or not favorable, they'll always be remembering the Lord. Does this make sense? Yeah, so we can see the difference there. But, as pointed out here, they're devotees. Right? And because they're serving the Lord takes care. But it's not that things don't go wrong. But the difference is, things go wrong, it doesn't bother Prahlad Maharaj. Things go wrong, it bothers the demigods. Does that make sense? Because one has attachment for these secondary things, the other doesn't. All the saintly persons present offer their prayers in this way. O Lord, O Supreme Maintainer of those sheltered at your lotus feet. O Original Personality of Godhead, the process of austerity and penance in which you instructed us before is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world, which lies dormant within you. This austerity was almost stopped by the activities of this demon. But now, by yourself, appearing in the form of Nrisingadev, which is meant just to give us protection, and by killing this demon, you have again approved the process of austerity. Because he stopped the whole process of everyone doing austerity because he's the only one that's supposed to get any benefit. And everybody else should just serve him, and that's his idea. By serving and pleasing him, that's how everybody will get benefit, because his idea, he's the supreme. Right? But now that he's been removed, now then all this natural performance of duties and that Krishna gives, they can follow them again and they can develop nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Usually in the past we see that they're all afraid of Ramasimha, that they cannot come closer and they push the lot first. But here we see they offer prayers.
From a distance. They're not coming up and, you know, yay! You know, whacking them on the back.
So it's in the same line.
Yes. No, it's just different things that are brought out, that they're offering, you know, very formal prayers and things like that. But it mentioned before, no one's gone forward to serve him. No one's fanning fans and doing all that kind of stuff that normally would be the position. The Lord's there, they would come and do all that. You know, but they're not. They're just kind of staying at their respectful distance and offering prayers. Srila Prabhupada comments, to rectify our material existence, austerity, tapasya, is absolutely necessary. However, when people in general come under the control of a demon or a demoniac ruling power, they forget this process of tapasya and gradually also become demoniac. All the saintly persons who were generally engaged in austerity felt relieved when Hiranyakashipu was killed by the Lord in the form of Nrisimhadeva. The cat is here and is ready to receive any attention that you may wish to bestow upon it. Yes. They realize that the original instruction concerning human life that is meant for tapasya, self-realization, was reaffirmed by the Lord when he killed Hiranyakashipu. Right? Because Hiranyakashipu took all the different austerities and everything and turned everything upside down. So then you didn't have the natural form of what it was supposed to be. But now by the Lord coming killing him, now everything goes back into its normal form. Right? So it becomes reestablished on what it's supposed to be. No? Determined. So. Yes, because tapasya, austerity means to perform your duties, right? That's tapasya. Let's see. The inhabitants of Pitri Loka prayed, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrisimhadeva, the maintainer of the religious principles of the universe. He has killed Hiranyakashipu, the demon who by force enjoyed all the offerings of the Shraddha ceremonies performed by our sons and grandsons on the anniversaries of our death, and who drank the water with sesame seeds offered in holy places of pilgrimage. By killing this demon, O Lord, you have taken back all this stolen property from his abdomen by piercing it with your nails. We therefore wish to offer our respectful obeisances unto you. So whatever was being done, then he was taking all the benefits, because then he knows that by austerity, by having more, pious benefits, then he gets more facility. So then whatever, he would see that people are performing whatever it is and then take it all himself. Right? But stop anything that was going to anybody else. The inhabitants of Siddha Loka prayed.
Regarding this point that he took all the offerings.
Yes.
And what done? I mean,
he's the boss. Come on.
Them, but,
on the grounds that he's the head of the universe and everything belongs to him.
He didn't know that there will be a reaction.
He's the supreme. What reaction will be there? You know, in his mind is, you know, he's in control of everything. What can go wrong? So that's some serious illusion. But because his point is, he doesn't care for Vishnu, doesn't care for that, doesn't care for the laws of nature. He's changing everything. You know, before a tree would give fruit in a particular season, he makes it give in every season. Because it's considered wrong if a tree gives fruit out of season. It's not considered auspicious. But he just arranged it like that because he wants all the fruits there whenever he likes. Direct action. Okay. The inhabitants of Siddha Loka prayed, O Lord Nrisimhadeva, because we belong to Siddha Loka, we automatically achieve perfection in all eight kinds of mystic power. Yet Hiranyakashipu was so dishonest that by the strength of his power and austerities, he took away our powers. Thus he became very proud of his mystic strength. Now, because this rogue has been killed by your nails, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Right, so they're bringing out the point of that it's improperly been behaved. he's turning everything upside down and all that. Okay, you figured out no one else is giving you any attention. Huh? Doesn't seem to care. Okay, we're reading this. You have to not step on it, okay? Yes. The inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka prayed, are acquired power to appear and disappear in various ways, according to varieties of meditation, was banned by that foolish Hiranyakashipu because of his pride and his superior bodily strength and his ability to conquer others. Now the Supreme Personality of Godhead has killed him, as if the demon were an animal. Under that supreme pastime form of Lord Nrisingadev, we eternally offer our respectful obeisances. Right? So you see is that they are offering prayers in connection with their aspect of service to the Lord. Right? So it's supposed to be done in a particular... No, that's not what you're supposed to do. Service that they do, that's ordained by the Lord. So that's how the universal order is supposed to be. Hiranyakashipu turns that upside down. Therefore, then they're pointing out that it is wrong. But at the same time, is why are they in that position? Because of their particular attachment and appreciation for that kind of, activity. So they're very happy that it's all put back into the proper place. But at the same time, as they do have their own interest in what they're going to gain from that, from that position. Does that make sense? Okay. The inhabitants of Nagaloka said, "The most sinful Hiranyakashipu took away all the jewels on our hoods and all our beloved beautiful wives. Now since his chest has been pierced by your nails, you are the source of all pleasure to our wives. Thus we together offer our respectful obeisances unto you." Srila Prabhupada comments, "No one is peaceful if his wealth and wife are forcibly taken away. All the inhabitants of Nagaloka, which is situated below the earthly planetary systems, were in great anxiety because their wealth had been stolen and their wives kidnapped by Hiranyakashipu. Now Hiranyakashipu, having been killed, their wealth and wives were returned and their wives felt satisfied. The inhabitants of various lokas or planets offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord because they were relieved by the death of Hiranyakashipu. Disturbances similar to those created by Hiranyakashipu are now taking place all over the world because of demoniac governments. As stated in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the men of the governments of Kali Yuga will be no better than rogues and plunderers. Thus the populace will be harassed on one side by scarcity of food, and on another by heavy taxation by the government. In other words, the people in most parts of the world in this age are harassed by the ruling principles of Hiranyakashipu." Right? So the government then is going on in such a way that it's not protecting the citizens. So he sees Hiranyakashipu was not protecting the citizens, right, of the universe. He was taking the position of king of the universe. He was not protecting anybody. Does that make sense? So because of not being protected, then there was a problem. Right? Does that make sense? And so as the Lord corrects that problem, now everybody can go back because now they're protected. Everything works properly. Yes? All the Manus offered their prayers as follows. "As your order carriers, O Lord, we, the Manus, are the lawgivers for human society. But because of the temporary supremacy of this great demon, Hiranyakashipu, our laws for maintaining Varnashram Dharma were destroyed. O Lord, now that you have killed this great demon, we are in our normal condition. Kindly order us, your eternal servants, what to do now." Srila Prabhupada comments. If you take them out into the field out there, and because they stay out there in the front, then...
I know.
Direct action. Okay. " Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. In many places in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord, Krishna, refers to the Varnashram Dharma of four Varnas and Ashrams. He teaches people about this Varnashram Dharma so that all of human society can live peacefully by observing the principles for the four divisions and four social divisions and four spiritual divisions, Varna and Ashram, and thus make advancement in spiritual knowledge. Right? So this Varnashram system is coming from Krishna. Krishna is discussing it, and Prabhupada is mentioning that the reason he's done it, that all human beings can take advantage. So his idea is, no, this is just for Indians. Right? It's a localized, regional, mundane thing. You know, because we're above Varnashram, of course. You know, totally absorbed in Western culture, but above Varnashram. Right? Doesn't make any sense, the statement. You know, if we're above, then we're, you know, then we're like the top of Lokis, right? You know, we just don't even worry about all this stuff. But if we're worried about Western culture, then why we wouldn't use the superior method of the Vedic, seeing that the Western is why we joined in the first place? If we were so satisfied with the Western culture, why did people become Krishna conscious? Because it wasn't satisfying. And then to claim, no, it is the system, then this is foolish. This is really foolish. Okay? So that's the one thing. The other thing it mentions here, Prabhupada points out, is Varna is called the social divisions. An ashram is called the spiritual divisions. So we always have to remember is that it has these two aspects. So the Varna means the occupation. That's the skills, the management, you know, the money, all the things that, you know, most think is very important. That's just social. So that means it's in the junior position to the ashram. So therefore the spiritual cultivation is the senior aspect, and the social and economic is the junior. But if we reverse that, then we have misunderstood the process. That's the difference. The Vedic, it puts the spiritual as the higher, the Varna is the lower, the occupation is lower. The modern puts the occupation as higher, and then the spiritual and, you know, aspect is lower. Like that. That's why it's considered not proper.
Mm-hmm. Huh. It says the manus. I usually always thought that there is one manu for the universe.
No, but some of them live longer than their period of control, of the ruling. And so that means they're a manu for that amount of time. Then it changes. So it may be. So every 71 Mahayugas, the manu changes. Now, whether he, at that time, you know, also that's the end of his life, or it's just he continues. Because you remember, Daksha was a manu, but then he was, you know, living for so much time before then, doing austerity until that time. So he would still be around. Swayambhuva would be around. You know, so, you know.
The prose.
He may only live that long, but it's not a specific thing. The point is that's how long it is. You know, it doesn't matter to us how long the president was alive before he took office and how long afterwards. The point is in office. So the same with the monarch. Yeah, because Swayambhuva is the son of Brahma, so he'll live as long as Brahma. But he only holds the post for that one of 14.
But it doesn't apply to Indra or Brahma, isn't it? Because Indra lives as long as he's Indra, and then...
That I haven't seen if that specifically, if he, you know, if that time... This is the one you took out, or this is the other one?
This is
the one that stays away.
Because Brahma is quite obvious.
But Brahma, the universe stays as long as he's alive.
Yes.
You know, like that. So then, so that will be one group of individuals with that lifespan. Then as you go down through the planetary systems, the lifespan gets shorter and shorter. So you might have someone who has come from here, done that, gone up to be Indra, and then his time runs out, and then he would come back here. Right? But you might have someone who's from a higher planetary system who takes the post of Indra because there's no one to take it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. He teaches people about the Varnashram Dharma so that all human society, means all, not just those in India, right? He teaches some individuals about this Varnashram Dharma so that those who live in the Indian subcontinent can live peacefully, but he doesn't say that. He says all teaches people in general, and that all humans can do that. And thus make advancement in spiritual knowledge. That's the whole point. Varnashram is to advance in spiritual knowledge. The idea is Varnashram sets the field of action that we're working with in a proper line so that we can get the best, maintain the purity and the best level of consciousness so we can advance in Krishna consciousness. That's the purpose of the Varnashram system. Right? The modern, it doesn't have any real value in this area. Maybe it can organize things in a way so that, some economics is there, some law and order in there. You know, they have the garbage trucks come by, pick up the garbage. You know, a few things like that. Some public works, a few things to try to manage it. The better that is, then, the better that's run. But that's only for so that people can live a life of sense gratification. It's not designed for that they can elevate themselves in transcendental knowledge. Well, the Vedic system is designed to elevate them in transcendental knowledge. So, coming from the background of a social system that doesn't have any spiritual value, then we may not look for it. We just look for it as organizational. So then we may think the Vedic system, well, it only organizes and ours organized, so we already have ours, why do we need another one? Rather than it can organize stuff, but how well is it organized? And it doesn't, support the spiritual development. Therefore, then the Vedic system supports that. You understand? Yes. You have to, a little bit louder.
Yeah. So in the Varnashram Dharma should be first it's introduced to people through first speech and then occupation words should be like...
The point is, those who are interested in spiritual life, then these other things will go nicely. You know? Because devotees, they accept spiritual life? Okay. So basically you can say the ashrams work. We have brahmacharis, grahastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. No one's saying, "Oh, this is being discriminatory." Why have some unnatural kind of thing? And oh, why not just let everybody do what they want? You know, the brahmacharya's out there, and he has 10 girls live in his room with him. You know, I mean, all these different things, right? We don't have a problem with its traditional system, right? Because it's spiritual. But when we deal with the social, then unless one's coming from a background of goodness, one can't relate to it. That doesn't mean that, oh, therefore we shouldn't use it. It means the reason we can't use Varnashram is not because it has a lack, we have a lack. We're unqualified to use it. Does that make sense? It's like a 3-year-old is unqualified to drive the car. So for the 3-year-old, it appears to be useless. Like that. But the point is if we accept that this is for, then... Because it's the natural position for human life, it can be followed. But if you don't accept it, then you won't understand it. Because the understanding of it doesn't come by our intelligence, it comes by the mercy of the Lord. Does that make sense? The Manus compiled the Manus Samhita. The word Samhita means Vedic knowledge, and Manu indicates that this knowledge is given by Manu. The Manus are sometimes incarnations of the Supreme Lord, and sometimes empowered living entities. Formerly, many long years ago, Lord Krishna instructed the sun god. The Manus are generally sons of the sun god. Therefore, while speaking to Arjuna about the importance of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham abhyayam, vivasvan manyave praha. Bhagavad Gita 4.1. This instruction was given to Vivasvan, the sun god, who in turn instructed his son Manu. Manu gave the law known as Manu Samhita, which is full of directions based on Varna and Ashrama. concerning how to live as a human being. These are very scientific ways of life. But under the rule of demons like Hiranyakashipu, human society breaks all these systems of law and order and gradually becomes lower and lower. Right? So that's what's pointing out here. The demoniac mentality breaks the laws of the Varnashram. It's not that we can say, oh, we're devotees, you know, we're so elevated, we don't follow this. No, that's due to the contamination of passion and ignorance that we say Varnashram is not needed. It's not because we're so spiritually advanced, it's because of the contamination in the heart still of passion and ignorance. You understand? The Vedic system is scientific. It's not that all the elements that are there are not within the society what's going on. It's just not scientifically organized. You know, the difference would be, let's say, there's a business, right? And then there's somebody trying to run it who does not know business. But, you know, the stock is there, customers are there, they have prices, money is exchanging hands, you know, all these different kinds of things are going on. But it's not really making profit in a stable way. Things aren't so nice. No one's really satisfied. So all it is the Vedic system means you bring in somebody who knows business and then it runs nicely. It's not changing everything. That's the modern system. So you just, oh, it's that you throw everything out, change. The Vedic system is, no, you make what's already there scientifically work. So that means you have to know the proportions, know the balance. Right? Someone doesn't know cooking, they put the spices they put are out of balance. Or they use the wrong systems. Right? You ever try to deep fry a squash? Right? You know, so it's the wrong system. Sounds great, you know, you deep fry things, it's nice, you know, paneer is deep fried and it's really good and it's soft and squash is soft, so we can deep fry it, right? Sounds really logical to someone who doesn't know cooking. So therefore, modern concepts of organization sound great to people who actually don't know what organization is. We're just being really blunt here. Because someone who knows cooking would say, no, that logic doesn't apply. But people who don't know, so yeah, that sounds far out. You know, like I told you, the kid with the deep fried ice cream. Yeah. You know, he heard about deep fried ice cream. And he thought, great, you know. So then, you know, during the break, he went home, you know, and that, went into the kitchen, turned on the ghee, you know, like that, got out a block of ice cream, dropped it into the ghee, started frying it, and is wondering why it's not getting fried. It's starting to melt, fall apart, till he has this bubbling, insane mass there. And then, unfortunately, that's when his mom walks in. Right? You know, if she had walked in before, she would have said, no, it's not like that. Does that make sense? So, you have to know the system. So it knows the system. You take the ice cream, it's really, really cold, you cut the piece the size you want, you put it on your spoon, you drop it in the ghee, pull it out immediately, so the outside gets melted slightly. Put it back in the freezer. Right? And so then you get this ice cream that has this outside that's a little bit crunchy. That's the uniqueness. Whoopee. But whatever. It's people like it. Okay? Yeah. So, you have to know, then you know what to do with it. You know how to use it. Does that make sense? If you don't know, then you'll come up with all kinds of stupid ideas. So the whole point is the modern system has limits where it's working, where it's not working. It works for a few, doesn't work for others. The Vedic system, it'll work for everybody. But you have to know how to balance it. That's the whole point. Cooking means balance. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, if you introduce the Varnashram, you're not changing the system. You're bringing it up to a scientific level. Like that. But it has to be by those who understand. That's why Prabhupada said, you create a class of Brahmins, and the Brahmins can introduce how the system works. Kshatriyas can administrate it. You know, Vaishyas are going to make money anyway. Now it's just a matter of scientifically being involved. Does that make sense? And so then it works very nicely. But that's the thing, is to think, oh, it'll be changed. So what's going to be lost by this? What will be lost is my so-called independence. That's why people are afraid of it. They're worried their sense gratification and other things will be lost. I won't be the controller, I won't be the enjoyer. But, no, as Prabhupada pointed out before, is that you get whatever's there and more. Right? What was that point Prabhupada said? It existed since... Okay. The Vedic civilization existed millions and millions of years ago. It existed since the creation of this universe. And it included arrangements all over the universe with all the modern amenities and even more. You know? So it had whatever is there, but and more. You know, and in a nicer way. You know, bathrooms that were big enough that your, shoulders didn't touch the walls. You know? Something that modern bathrooms don't seem to appreciate.
There's a difference between breaking the laws, means like you're breaking the laws because you know the laws, and rejecting and acting against the national without knowing the laws means you just...
It's a Niyamagraha, right? There's those who dogmatically follow the laws but don't understand what the laws are for, so they accept nicely the secondary aspects and follow that perfectly, or the best that they can, but they don't know that the secondary is to attain primary, so they don't even connect that connection. They just follow the secondary very nicely. Right? Then you have the other group of Niyamagrahagis that they don't understand also the primary and don't see the importance of the secondary, so they don't follow the secondary. So then those who follow the secondary and those who don't follow the secondary, they fight with each other. Right? But both of them are wrong because they've missed the point of the primary. But at least of the two, the one who accepts the laws, they're more pious than the ones who don't. So the one doesn't understand the actual primary aspect and is not pious, and the other one doesn't understand the primary but is pious, right? But because of their piety, they may not be suffering much, so they don't see the need for spiritual life, while the others are suffering. There's a window when they can catch it. We'll see it when it comes up in the Varnashram, because we're discussing, these are discussions with Yudhishthira Maharaj, with Narad Muni. I think that's next, no? It's the Varnashram.
Yeah.
Like that discussion. So he mentions in there the whole Varnashram system and how everybody's involved and who does what. And then he mentions about the Malechas and Yavanas, is that because they don't follow it, they suffer. And because they suffer, there's a little window of opportunity occasionally where they wonder, why am I suffering? So if somebody comes and preaches at that time, then they could take up devotional service and then be involved in the Varnashram system. Because otherwise they won't take it up. You know, it's only because they're suffering, and then during that period of suffering, if they're convinced about it, then they'll follow it and see the benefits. But once the point of anxiety goes away, then what's the need to change anything? So then they won't appreciate it. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like when you go to in the modern medical academy, you come in, you're just told, they may tell you, you have this disease, take this medicine. You know, and they'll tell a little restriction here and there, but that's just for the time you take the medicine. That's all they'll tell you, right? Because they're so intelligent and so fabulous that no one could understand their position, at all, right? So the Ayurvedic doctor, he'll tell you, this is what you have, these are the things, this is why you're sick. Because your lifestyle is like this, you have to adjust the lifestyle so you won't be sick. So he actually explains more. It's more scientific.
It's more scientific.
Yeah, it's more like that. So that's the whole thing we're pointing out, is that it's a higher principle. It trains in the lifestyle and all that. But that's why the modern medicine is great. You don't have to adjust your lifestyle. Right? Yeah, that's all. That's the whole thing. Well, the other one, then it appears as restriction, but it's due to lack of restriction while you're sick. So we want to have no restriction and not get sick. But it doesn't work. You get what you pay for. like that. Okay. This instruction was given to Vivasvan, the sun god, who in turn instructed to Manu. Manu gave the law known as Manu Samhita, which is full of directions based on varna and ashram concerning how to live as a human being, right? And a human being is one who is acquiring about the Supreme. So it's not for non-devotees. When you fit through that gap. Okay, so human being means when you inquire about the Supreme. And so Varnashram is meant for that person. So when we say you're following Varnashram, means you're inquiring about the Supreme. You're inquiring about the Supreme, then you're following Varnashram, right? So for philosophy, you're inquiring about the Supreme. And for religion, you're following Varnashram. Does that make sense?
Sorry, it might be an issue question, but where are these carrots coming from?
The carrots?
Yeah, Varnashram always equated with carrots, growing carrots and all this stuff. Where's this coming from?
Well, if you're in a society that all they can see is men and money and management and economics, and so therefore then it's not the people who see manpower, because you never hear them talk about carrots. Right? Have you ever seen, you know, president's address to the nation and he talks about carrots? Never, right? No. So that means now we're going to talk about money. Okay? More universally understood. Everybody's worried about money. Very people understand how to manage and organize. Okay? So therefore, the money will be the more universal, how you say, approach. Right? Now, of money, then Varnashram, then who makes money? Vaishyas. Okay. So, what's recommended? Cow protection and agriculture. Banking and trade is there, but no one catches that. Right? But, you know, but the first point is when cows were produced, the Vaishyas were manifest to take care of them. Just like when mankind is produced, the kings are produced to take care. And when the Veda manifests, the Brahmins are produced to take care of the Veda. Right? And so, therefore, then, that means you have to be doing farming, right? Because that's something everybody, you know, how many people have a cow? Okay? Mm-hmm. Not so many. But how many people have a little patch out in the backyard where they grow some carrots? Are we starting to catch? But there's a few more. Yeah, it means of all the devotees living here in Mayapur, you know, many will have little patches of growing their lettuce or whatever it is. But how many have a cow? Yeah, so yeah, like that. So that's the whole point. Is that therefore then when we're so then Varnashram means growing carrots. It is, but I remember back, it was in the 90s, one argument that was going on in this way. We were saying all the theories of it and what's necessary. And then the point was, no, says we don't need all this theory, we need practical work. So when the Brahmins get out there and get their fingernails dirty by growing something, then we'll get something done instead of sitting around and talking all this stuff.
Okay.
No, this is called atheist. This is called demoniac. This is called not understanding Varnashram and claiming you're the authority in Varnashram. So that's the whole point, is it starts from the Brahmins. Brahmins create Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas create the environment that regulates and controls so that the Vaishyas and Shudras will be very satisfied. So Brahmins aren't supposed to grow carrots. Like that. You know, that's not their job. They're supposed to take care of the Veda. Does that make sense? So if you're growing carrots, then harder to study and teach. You know. Oh no, but set example. It says, you know. Yeah. There's just so many attachments to that. These are scientific ways of life, but under the rule of demons like Hiranyakashipu, human society breaks all these systems of law and order, and gradually becomes lower and lower. So that's the whole thing. Is Hiranyakashipu is breaking it because he's the, you know, wants to be the supreme enjoyer. We're breaking it because of why? It would be the same, just that we're a small time, that's all. So the point is we don't break these things. You know? We can't, means before joining Krishna consciousness, there's a good chance most individuals within the society never even heard of Varnashram. Good chance. Right? And so, therefore, how do we know about it? From Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's recommending it. You can see here it's a positive thing. But at the same time, it in itself, because it's a social system without Krishna consciousness, is also a waste of time. A nicer waste of time than not following it, but still a waste of time. Right? So, does that make sense? So now we can't say, oh, Prabhupada says it's a waste of time, so we don't use it. That's misunderstanding. So that may be well-meaning, it may not be well-meaning, it may, you know, whatever it is. But the point is it said this is what we're supposed to do. Right? Somebody says.
Because of the bad experience of the past.
Bad experience of what?
Of the past. Because
but what is that bad experience of the past? What do you mean by bad experience of the past?
There has to be like Bhagavad Pancharatri. And because in the past, devotees would promote the Vedic and throw out Bhagavad Pancharatri. That's why now devotees are so...
Okay, so then if that's actually the point, no, that means we could say that it could be a catalyst. But if we take that scientifically and look at it, okay, as we mentioned, why did most devotees join? Because of a grand, fabulous experience in the modern world? No. So then why would they go back to it? It's not because, oh, there's no other alternative than that, because the Vedic doesn't work, we had a bad experience, so we have to go back to the modern, because that's the only thing available. Or is it due to attachment? Okay. Now, how many of these devotees who've joined from the West and all that and that, how has been their experience with family life?
Oh.
Yeah, so then, but why are we promoting it? Because if we're giving up Varnashram by following it for a few, for, you know, getting the idea from the 70s and up to beginning of 80s and that, you know, so less than 10 years, kind of, or that, or maximum of that. No, probably 73, 74. It's more kind of where you see more prominence talking about it and all that. Probably saying the need for establishing Varnashram. I think it was like 74, 75. Like that. And then by 81, then, you know, we're, you know, moving on from all that kind of stuff. So then, so how much experience is there? So not so much and we're throwing it out. But then, family life has been miserable all over the world and all cultures of the world, and it's been a problem. So why is it even suggested? You know, shouldn't we just, you know, if we're going to throw it all out, then, you know, then everybody just is celibates and makes life a whole lot easier, right? You know, we solved the accommodation problem, right? Right, you know, because it's before we had, you know, you have one house, we had 30 devotees living in it. You know, the karmis couldn't figure out how it was possible. We were all there peacefully, not killing each other and that. So, one house, 30 devotees. Like, you know, Gaur Nagar, how many houses? You know, thousands of devotees could stay over there. No?
Now, devotees cannot figure it out how it was possible. Well, karmis couldn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, because Krishna consciousness is there. So there's no, you know, the attachment's not there. So then it works very easily. You understand? So it's, you can't say, oh, they had a bad experience with what? Somebody's in charge and they make some trouble. Was that Varnashram? You have a temple president. He's a little rough in his application, but he's trying to do stuff for Krishna, but it may be a little rough. Is that Varnashram? So we throw that out, and so then we make a head of a committee or we make a group. How is that any different? You know what I'm saying? You have the farmer and you have a council of pigs. And they both harass. What's the difference? You know? Does that make sense? You know, just, it takes more clothes and food to take care of the pigs than it does to take care of the farmer. So it was better when it was worse. You understand? So that's the whole thing, it's inconsistent. Oh, we tried that. No, they never tried it. Because you have to know what it is. Somebody doesn't know how to cook, they go into the kitchen, try to cook, it didn't work out. Oh, this cooking is nonsense. So someone who knows cooking, can they accept that they tried cooking? No, you have to know what cooking is to try cooking. So that's the whole point. If things don't go right, find out why it does, how to use it. It says it's scientific. So that means if it wasn't working, that means it wasn't approached in a scientific way. Make it scientific, it'll work. Modern man prides himself in being scientific, being logical. And then at the same time, we just make judgments based on sentiment. And then somehow or another, we're not supposed to notice. Right? When we want, oh, we're so ever so scientific and you know, objective and unattached, and whatever we want, we're totally attached and totally identified with the bodily consciousness. You know what I'm saying? And no one should notice. Right? No one should notice this bipolar, you know, nature.
And you can't talk about it either.
Yeah, and you shouldn't talk about it either, because you know that's, you know, that's what you do. When, you know, the guy over in the corner, in the what do they call them now? You know, where people that are a bit clinical stay.
Loony bin.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's what they used to. I'm just saying, is there a better
institution? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, so, okay.
Insane asylum.
Yeah, insane asylum, but whatever. And then the guy over in the corner is sitting there and he's Napoleon Bonaparte, right? Nobody bothers him. You know, it's just, you know, one of the things you don't do. Like in the modern academy, you don't bring up conclusions. You just don't do that. People will unravel, you know. In Japan, you don't ask somebody how they are, right? They'll unravel. So in the same way, is you don't inquire about the methods they use. You only find fault in anything else other than what you're doing. But that's not scientific. The Vedic system is, no, there's a system in that. It's, you don't know how to use it. Learn. You know? And everything takes practice. Yes?
I'm trying to go back to that. I was kind of thinking about what you were saying when you were talking about growing food.
Growing food.
Well, growing agriculture, finding food, because it's so simple, but it's something very spiritually profound about that connectedness, the fundamental aspect of our natural system.
Yeah.
But so what are you saying, like, for example, here we're struggling to, like, we have so much land, we're struggling to grow food here, like, when it's so natural. What do you think it would take for that to get activated? Like, that's a really natural aspect of the environment to grow food.
It is. But the problem is where do we make our devotees? From which particular demographic? Right? The urban environment, the rural environment, the out in the bush environment, North Pole, South Pole.
What do you mean, in my area or internationally?
Internationally.
In cities.
Yeah, so city people, here's the number one rule with city people. Seeing a slightest amount of drop of dirt or mud on your shoe is the end of the world. So why would they stick their fingers in it? Right? That's for someone else to do. See, a city person goes into a store and there's this little styrofoam thing there that has the vegetables all cleaned and nice and everything, and all the good ones are picked out, all the ones that aren't perfect are thrown out, and that, you know, which does many things. One is you get a very good thing, and two, it keeps the prices high, even though carrots don't cost that much. Then you put a little cellophane over it, do all the things and all that, and that, and that's what vegetables look like. You know, that they actually originally grow and they have dirt on them. Like you buy potatoes here, they got dirt on them. You have to wash that off. In the West, they're already perfect. You know, you only wash it because, you know, there's a concept, you know, we would maybe put antibacterial stuff on them or wash them with, you know, Dr. Bronner's soap or something in a scrub brush. But that's not a consideration of, that's just the, you know, I say, modern kind of bacterial awareness. Okay? So now if you take those people, even you put them on a farm, what are they going to do for an occupation?
Wash
the vegetables. But as an occupation, they'll get in their car, drive into the city, and work. So for city people, a farm is not a farm, it's a suburb. Right? And living in the suburbs is always nicer than living in the in the city, right? It's like this. Here, I'll give you another example. Taking care of Tulsi, is that spiritual and material? Wait a minute. See, now when we look at it intellectually, it's both. When you were looking at it from the kind of new agey concept of natural life, living out, you know, farming, doing the things, then you said spiritual. You have to be consistent here. Are we talking new age, or are we going to talk, you know, our philosophy? Which one? Take your pick. I need one to work with.
I want our
philosophy. Okay, so then the point is this: taking care of Tulsi, we would count that as devotional service or not? It's devotional service. Okay. And let's say picking flowers and taking care of flowers we're using for the deities. Is that considered devotional service or not? Okay. What about serving the Dham? Cleaning, decorating, making it nice. Right? Okay. So these are all activities. You see where I'm going, right? These are all activities that we would say is directly part of the deity worship and serving the Dham by living in the Mayapur. Okay? Now, a lot of people do this service in Mayapur. But you know who those people are? Hired karmis. Why? Because no one wants to get their fingers dirty. That road out there used to be swept by devotees. Tulsi was only taken care of by devotees. The flowers were taken care of by devotees. But everybody'd rather be a manager and this and that, so no one takes care of these things. That's my problem. That's what we went back to before. City people can't relate to anything natural. Right? This used to be this, in Vrindavan, you've seen Vrindavan? There's this Parikram path. It used to be this fabulous fine dust that you could walk around. Now it's it's asphalt. Right? Because people can't relate to, you know, get dirt on their shoes. Oh no. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's just they separate themselves more and more from nature. That's what you're dealing with. So no one wants to do it. But it's not but by education these things it can't happen. Like on the east side, then in the community out there, they have big goshalas and that, and I think it's once a week everybody goes out and takes care of the cows. But I think it's the only project in the movement that does that. So it's not just, oh yeah, you get the new bhaktas to go through that. Everybody does it. Top down.
Hmm?
Yeah. Everybody goes out there.
Where?
Hmm? Yeah. Means the Chopati kind of circle. You understand? So they don't see a problem with these things. Because it's our culture and that they do it. You understand? But we're not taking the opportunity. At the same time, there's all this, oh, where's the service? You know, we've got no service and all that. There's tons of service. You just have to do it. Service means I sit in a nice office like that and I'm in charge of things and that's service rather than go out and do something practical. Does that make sense? So the point is, yes, all these things can be nicely engaged in the Lord's service, but people will act according to their nature. So if their nature is not purified, then it's not going to come up to the standard. But if it's in a purified state, then they can see the value of doing these things. Does that make sense?
How do we get there? That's not for here.
This is not a management assembly. This is not figure out how to get the community to work. We're simply saying that the philosophy is there. This is what should be done. If people take it seriously, it can be done. Like that. Those who don't take it seriously, don't.
Okay.
right? Those who do have an interest in the cows and that, they have great goshalas. They have nice things going on. And those that don't, then it doesn't happen. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just a matter of what is the vision. So the vision, if it's Krishna conscious, it works. If you includes all these things, it works. You know, we're not saying everybody should be doing that, but at least some people can be doing that. Does that make sense? Thus, there's no peace in the world. The conclusion is that if we want real peace and order in the human society, we must follow the principles laid down by the Manu Samhita and confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. So here, this is not a, well, you could, maybe, and if you like, and it's not so important. And that probably just says, if you want peace in the world, then this is the only way it's going to happen. And he directly says, Manu Samhita, like that, as confirmed by the Supreme Lord. But most will just say, oh, Manu, we're devotees, we don't follow that, you know, like that. The Prabhupada so many times refers to it. Right? Lord Shiva came up. Did he say that, you know, we should all be down there doing some Shiva puja or the Petris? Oh, yes, no, we should be doing the Petri puja and all that. People have to do that. Grihasthas, if they're not worshipping the forefathers and all those things like that, they'll go to hell. Did Prabhupada make any comment about we should be doing that? No, because we're devotees. But when he gets to Manu, then he mentions this has is supposed to be done. Did he say, oh, we're devotees, you know, even though the Manu Samhita is there and all that, but we're devotees, so we don't really have to follow it and all that. He doesn't say that. No, he just says straight up front, this must be followed. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Prajapatis offered their prayers as follows. O Supreme Lord, Lord of even Brahma and Shiva, we, the Prajapatis, were created by you to execute your orders, but we were forbidden by Hiranyakashipu to create any more good progeny. Now the demon is lying dead before us, his chest pierced by you. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you, whose incarnation in this form of pure goodness is meant for the welfare of the entire universe. Right, so the main point is nobody could do their proper duties because he wanted it to go the way he liked. So that is the demoniac mentality. It's about how we like rather than within the form of the rules and regulations. Then within that, we make our choices. Does that make sense? That's the point. That's the difference between mode of goodness and mode of passion. Mode of goodness is, this is the form of it, and within that, then we can create variety. Mode of passion is, no, I don't bother with the form, I just do whatever I whimsically like. Right? I can quote, oh, but here this one says, the internet said that, and the internet said this, and all that kind of jazz. But the point is it's whimsical. Because who said that the internet's the authority? Have you ever seen the rule that internet's authority? No. The inhabitants in Gandharva Loka prayed, Your Lordship, we ever engage in your service by dancing and singing in dramatic performances. But this Hiranyakashipu, by the influence of his bodily strength and valor, brought us under his subjugation. Now he has been brought to this low condition by your Lordship. What benefit can result from the activities of such an upstart as Hiranyakashipu? Right, so now, all these things were how I say, they were engaged in the Lord's service by expanding the glories of the Lord by singing and dancing about the Lord. But with Hiranyakashipu, then they're engaged in other occupations. Right? You know, like that. The inhabitants of the Charna planet said, O Lord, because you have destroyed the demon Hiranyakashipu, who was always a stake in the hearts of all honest men, we are now relieved and we eternally take shelter of your lotus feet, which award the conditioned soul liberation from materialistic contamination. The inhabitants of Yakshaloka prayed, O controller of the 24 elements, we are considered the best servants of your lordship because of rendering services pleasing to you. Yet we engaged as palanquin carriers by the order of Hiranyakashipu, the son of Diti. O Lord, in the form of Nrisimhadev, you know how this demon gave trouble to everyone. But now you have killed him, and his body is mixing with the five material elements. Right? So here's saying the Lord of the 24 elements, because now Hiranyakashipu is merging back into those elements. So, Prabhupada comments. The Supreme Lord is the controller of the 10 senses, the five material elements, the five sense objects, the mind, intelligence, the false ego, and the soul. Therefore, he is addressed as Pancha Vimsha, the 25th element. The inhabitants of the Yaksha planet are supposed to be the best of all servants, but Hiranyakashipu engaged them as palanquin carriers. The entire universe was in trouble because of Hiranyakashipu. But now that Hiranyakashipu was mixing with the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, everyone felt relief. Upon Hiranyakashipu's death, the Yakshas were reinstated in their original service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, they felt obliged to the Lord and offered their prayers. So that's the natural position. But, you know, we see now and again they may get distracted here and there, but that's their natural position. They're very expert at serving and all that. So, there's a... The inhabitants of Kim Purusha Loka said, "We are insignificant living entities, and you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller. Therefore, how can we offer suitable prayers unto you?" When this demon was condemned by devotees because they were disgusted with him, he was then killed by you. Right? And he's just going on. The material modes of nature are going, but then when he disturbs the devotees, then the Lord comes and kills him. Srila Prabhupada comments. The Lord appears in order to execute two kinds of activities, to kill the demons and to protect the devotees. When the devotees are too disturbed by the demons, the Lord certainly appears in different incarnations to give the devotees protection. The devotees following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj should not be disturbed by the demoniac activities of the non-devotees. Rather, they should stick to their principles as sincere servants of the Lord and rest assured that the demoniac activities directed against them will not be able to stop their devotional service. So, not that when disturbances come up, they give up their devotional service. No, they keep going with their service. That's the whole point. And the Lord will take care of everything. It's just a matter of time, when. Because the Lord has His plan. He knows what's going on. So, what we require... What will put us in a better situation? What will make us advance in Krishna consciousness? Krishna knows this. You know, we may or may not know this. You know, generally, our idea is great, then that's good for Krishna consciousness, and not great, not good for Krishna consciousness. Right? But Krishna will know what things will be better, what won't be, how we'll become purified, which aspects we need to purify. And then, at the right time, everything will work out in a very glorious way. Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandini.